The second case for oral argument this morning is in the interest of LN Jr. and concerning MCN respondent. For the appellant mother, MCN, is Mr. Douglas Papendick, an attorney for Mitchell. And for the appellee, State of South Dakota, is Ms. Ann Holhauser, an assistant attorney general. Mr. Papendick, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel, clerks. My name is Doug Papendick, for the record. I'm an attorney in Mitchell. I do represent the appellant mother in this particular case. What I would like to do is bring out basically two basic points in my argument to you today. One concerns the reasonable efforts that the Department of Social Services was required to make during the pendency of the case. And the second issue I'd like to bring up is the court's decision to terminate parental rights. So let's talk about reasonable efforts. In this particular case, the child was taken into foster care in October of 2002. 8 months later, we had the dispositional trial in the case. At some point, and I believe it was in April, the Department of Social Services asked that the AFSA or ASFA apply. The court made no determination with regards to the Adoption and Safe Families Act. What the court did do was schedule a trial that was to be heard within 60 days.
Failure to apply that actually favors your client then, doesn't it?
Excuse me?
Failure of the court to apply the Safe Families Act actually works in your client's favor, do you think?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
All right. So you're not here today to complain about that?
No, as a matter of fact, we had no objection at all to basically fast-tracking this case. What had happened was is that by the time we got to trial, we were able to receive a psychological evaluation from Dr. Matthew Christensen that indicated that there are some possibilities here where reunification is possible. But here's the problem. Once the state decided to fast track the case to termination, they had made up their minds that they basically had to make no further effort in reunification. So that was not done. Despite requests on our part that visitations be increased, possibly returning the child to mother for extended visitations, home-based therapy, those things were simply not considered by the Department of Social Services. And the reason they did that was because of the mother's past behaviors. Now keep in mind that she was in Huron when a previous ANN petition had been filed. She wasn't doing very well there. Towards the end of that case, she moved to Mitchell. And eventually, Beadle County terminated their services. She was no longer under any of their control.
Let me interrupt for 1 second. You say that these reasonable efforts weren't made, but, you know, it looks to me like the trial court looked at this history going back to 97 and apparently considered what efforts have been made over those years. Is that essentially what really happened in this case?
That is what happened in this case. I'd like to point out, it's just like somebody who's gone to treatment three or four times. Third time, fourth time, it might catch, it might take. And that's essentially what happened here. In Huron, she had gone through the programs and it didn't take, it simply didn't take. It's just like having an old jalopy. She had a lemon up there. She came to Mitchell. Apparently the services took. We had better services for her. It's just like somebody finding another attorney or a different counselor. Things seemed to click. And once those changes started to be made, the state still took the position. They still had focused on their mind that we're going to terminate parental rights. They made no further effort on their part to adjust any of their plans accordingly.
Well, then, are you suggesting a rule of law that no matter what the prior history is, once a new petition is filed, there has to be a new set of reasonable efforts or compliance with the Safe Families Act?
Well, essentially what I'm saying is this, is that once a parent begins to make improvements, the state should adjust their plan accordingly. A lot of these cases that I see, and I'm sure that you see as well, is that parents do fail. I've been involved in a lot of termination cases, and during the pendency of the proceedings, parents generally fail in exercising the plan. This case was pigeonholed for that end result.
Do you seem to be conceding then that if you add the Mitchell activities of the DSS to the the Huron ones to the Mitchell ones, that there's enough there to say that they used adequate efforts to try and rehabilitate her, get her over her drinking problem? But you're saying you have to start fresh in Mitchell?
Not necessarily. Not starting fresh. But
did you know that the trial court was using the background information from Huron?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And did you ever object to the use of that in any way?
To some extent, but not really. I mean, the court can take judicial notice of the proceedings up in Beadle County.
Can you remind me the time frame then? How much time was involved where you could actually detect her improvement?
That what?
How much time was involved where you would detect that she had improved or made improvements?
Well, actually, from the time that I had met her in, it was either late October, I believe, early November, to the time 8 months later when we had the dispositional trial, she had made significant improvements. It was like she was a completely different person.
Were there any problems during that period of time? Did she relapse or end up with any kind of incidents?
No, it was actually a pretty steady increase.
And that was all before the trial court?
Yes. Yes.
And who testified on her behalf as far as her improvements?
Well, just Dr. Matthew Christensen. But on the same token, Samantha Miller from the Department of Social Services also testified that there was improvement in the case. And nobody's denying that there wasn't any significant improvement. In fact, Samantha Miller did testify that there was significant improvement.
Are you asking us as a matter of law to then hold that in an instance like this where we have the up and down patterns of a parent, that the best interests of the child are served by continuing to string this along just to see if the upswing becomes a permanent upswing, or waiting until one more fall and then the department can finally step in? I mean, is this in the best interest of a child?
Well, in this case, I believe it would have been. In this case, she'd made enough improvement in her life. In fact, the department had been looking at if the court hadn't terminated parental rights, they testified that they would have returned the child or attempted to return the child before school started to get the child adjusted to that setting.
So would it be an abuse of discretion? Is that the standard we're looking at here to reverse it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
So we would not be creating new law necessarily. We would be looking at the facts of this case and saying that the trial court abused its discretion by terminating parental rights.
That's
when
correct.
There was 8 months of improvement.
Yes.
Okay.
Did the trial court, it looked to me like the trial court must have relied on Dr. Dame's opinion and not adopted Dr. Christensen's opinion.
That's correct. I think Dr. Dame's opinion came out in 2001, and at that time they were looking at possibility of terminating parental rights in Beadle County. For some unknown reason, they didn't proceed with that, and I can only speculate as to why that might not have happened.
Didn't Dr. Dame's opinion turn out to be kind of ironically prophetic in this case?
In what sense?
Well, that there were relapses again after he saw her.
Oh, and that's correct. And that would have been based upon what had happened up in Huron. The mother wasn't in Mitchell all that long, and in fact, she really hadn't plugged herself into any of the programs in Mitchell, at least to a great extent, until she had suicidal ideations and depression, where she was looking at an emergency commitment. From that point on, you know, you could tell that in looking at her, she was angry with the world, she was belligerent, and from that point on, she gradually increased. She had different counselors. She was able to control her behavior much better. I believe she was on different medication that probably helped. Medication management was every 3 months, so Dr. Stone would look at her medication and decide whether any adjustments should occur. So she had all of those things going for her in Mitchell. And it's just the difference of what took place in Huron compared to what took place in Mitchell when she really got started on the program.
So how did the trial court abuse its discretion?
The trial court, we believe, abused its discretion basically. When you look at SDCL 26-8A-26, there are three basic factors in the court. We believe has to look at all three factors before termination of parental rights is required. One, if it appears that all reasonable efforts have been made to rehabilitate the family. Two, that the conditions which led to the removal of the child still exist. And three, there is little likelihood that those conditions will be remedied. The court has to find all three of those things before it is required to terminate parental rights. And we're saying that the court erred in finding all three of those things. First of all, with regards to reasonable efforts, of course, and we touched on that a little bit, we don't believe that the department made enough reasonable efforts in the case. Once they made their decision to terminate parental rights, they didn't feel anything else was necessary, despite some significant improvements on mother's part. Two, the court should have looked at the conditions which led to the removal of the child. One thing is the mother moved out of the boyfriend's home. Second thing is she was not depressed any longer. She was not suicidal. Third, she did not exhibit any angry outbursts anymore. In fact, our contention is that she was a changed person from the time the ANN began in Davison County to the time of the dispositional trial. She was a changed person, so that the conditions which led to the removal no longer existed. The third factor is whether there's little likelihood that those conditions would be remedied. We're contending that here, in fact, you know, there was good likelihood that those conditions were remedied. One, she had a different counselor. The second thing is that she was under some medication management. Different medications. Every 3 months she met with Dr. Stone to change the medications if necessary. He looked at that. The third thing is that she was able to learn, in talking with her counselor, how to change her behavior. She knew how to control herself, her outbursts. She knew how to manage her life. So in that respect, she made significant improvements, and those conditions were actually remedied. Now, the statute indicates if there is little likelihood that those conditions will be remedied. And I want to emphasize little likelihood. In this case, we feel that there was a good chance here that the conditions were remedied. And based on those three factors, we're contending that the trial court erred in finding by clear and convincing evidence that termination was the least restrictive alternative.
Now, did this child have some special difficulties?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you remind me what those all were?
Attention deficit disorder, and the child was on medication for that particular problem.
How much did that play into the judge's decision, do you think?
I don't recall the court indicating anything in his oral decision afterwards, and I'm not sure if it was listed in the findings of fact and conclusions of law either.
Was Dr. Christensen the only witness that supported your position at the dispositional phase?
Yes, Your Honor. I had taken a brief recess, talked to my client a little bit ahead of time, and we determined that we got all of the evidence in that we needed to get in outside of, you know, the bonding that she had between her child and her desire to have the child return back to her. So based on that and her limited intellectual functioning, I decided that we would just rest.
Was there any testimony after she came to Mitchell that she became alcohol dependent again?
No, as a matter of fact, that was not a concern that I had. The only time I saw that would have been a problem was when I read Dr. Dame's report. The Department of Social Services had no concern about that, and I spoke with the department about that problem. It didn't seem like that was an issue, although Dr. Christensen did recommend that she obtain another evaluation just to address that. And that just goes further to my argument that this mother, this person, can change. She hadn't gone to AA meetings, at least since she'd been to Mitchell. She basically did it on her own. And whether that's because of a strong personality or what, but she had plenty of incentive, and she apparently had the ability to control any problem she had, at least with substance abuse. And there's not too many people that can do that.
You referred to her limited her limited mental ability. Does it show in the record what her IQ was?
Yes, that all. It's borderline, I believe. And that would have been in Dr. Christensen's report, I believe. Oh, and if not there, it would be in Dr. Dame's report.
You were talking below 80?
I think it was.
Are you completing the presentation?
I think I am, unless anybody's got any further questions.
You're not required to use the full 20 minutes, so that's why I asked. Okay. It looked like you were completed, so I just asked.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Papendick. Ms. Holzhauser, you have 20 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Again, my name is Ann Holzhauser. I appear on behalf of the state of South Dakota. What this case involves, I think, is a mother who has been characterized as having a severe and persistent mental illness. It's undisputed both by the testimony and the evaluation completed by Dr. Christensen and Dr. Dame that mother has bipolar disorder, that she has major depression, and she has borderline personality disorder. On the other hand, the case involves a child who has been characterized as having special needs. He has ADHD. He was, at least for a time, diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder. And moreover, he's been placed, or as of the age of 5, he had been placed in foster care 4 times due to mother's mental illness and her struggle with her mental illness.
Was he 5 at this time?
Yes, I believe so. I think because I believe it played a large role in the trial court's decision, I think a review of the record or the history is warranted. the case began in the sense that the department's involvement with the family began back in January of 1997, when the child was first placed in foster care because mother at that time was seeking psychiatric treatment for a mental illness. That also began not just the first placement of child in foster care, but that began what I think is a pattern that developed over the course of the case, and that is that mother would cycle, that she seemed to stabilize when the child was outside of her care. When she was not caring for the child, she'd stabilize. But once the child was returned to her care and the department's involvement with her ended, then she would gradually slide downhill, become suicidal, become depressive, result in another hospitalization and another placement in foster care. And again, I think that's reflected in the record.
How long a periods of good times had she had before this 8-month improvement? Lasted that long before?
Okay. Her last placement in foster care before the current case, this case started in October of 2002. The child's last placement in foster care was in April of 2001 and continued to October of 2001, so a year earlier. But throughout that year that passed, mother and child were in Mitchell and were receiving extensive services. They were receiving individual counseling, they were receiving medication management, they were receiving home-based services. In fact, they were receiving 1.5 to 2.5 hours a week.
My question is, though, during this period of time when this family was involved with the Department of Social Services, what was the longest time? I mean, you said she had ups and downs, and there were periods of time where if the child wasn't there, she was better and could cope better. What was the longest period of time that you had seen prior to this time, if you remember?
Where mother was coping?
Yes, where she was showing improvement.
Okay, I think that's difficult to say. There was a period between the first placement, which was in January of 1997, and the second placement, which was in February of 2000. But in between there, the department received several reports. So I don't know whether you can say she, and that was when the child was in her custody.
Mm-hmm. So okay. But perhaps aside this from, may have been the longest period where she had really shown improvement over that longest period of time.
Possibly, yeah, perhaps.
The other question I have is the doctor that testified on behalf of the social services. What was his name? Dame.
Dr. Dame actually did not testify. His evaluation was included in the record, yeah.
He made his determination sometime prior to the actual final hearing on the termination of parental rights.
I believe he made his evaluation, which included a recommendation that mother's rights be terminated, back in June of 2001.
Okay.
And that would have been 2 months after the child's removal.
Okay, and some year or so prior to the time that the termination actually happened.
Well, this termination in this case, which was the fourth foster care placement, didn't occur until June of 2003.
Oh, so his was 3 years old.
2 years old, yeah.
2 years old.
Yeah.
And if I understand right, the trial court relied pretty heavily on that determination.
I think the trial court did.
Is that abuse of discretion in itself to have an analysis and an opinion and not have it updated?
I don't think so. With all due respect, there was nothing presented which discredited Dr. Dame's evaluation. In fact, his prediction came true. He predicted that mother would have would continue to have psychiatric crises, which would affect her relationship with the child and which would require the removal. I don't think he said require the removal of the child, but which would affect her relationship with the child because of her persistent mental illness. In addition, I think the courts, if there was a reluctance to base this decision on Dr. Christensen's evaluation, there's a reason for that, too. Dr. Christian was questioned when he testified as to the basis for his evaluation, and it was clear that he didn't have all of the information. It appeared that he was only aware of two foster care placements. He wasn't aware that the child had been in foster care twice before. He wasn't aware of the extent of the services that the child and mother were receiving prior to the placement in foster care, the fourth placement in foster care, that they had been receiving home-based services for a considerable length of time.
Did he say in testimony that he would have changed his opinion had he known that?
I think he said that it was something he would take into consideration. I don't think he said that he would change his opinion. But on top of that, he acknowledged that his focus was upon mother. He didn't have child's background. He didn't have the information regarding child's history, child's treatment. He acknowledged that he was not expressing an opinion as to what was in the best interest of the child. So I think what the court did was look at what it's required to do is look at what's in the best interest of the child.
Let me just ask you a little bit philosophical question here. You know, back when I started practicing law in 77, the Department of Social Services hardly ever came forward and asked for termination of parental rights. It was a different philosophy at that point of society and the department and the whole thing. And that basically at that point the opinion was to keep a child with the family and a mother and a father if possible. That seems to have really changed, and now of course the courts are bombarded every time you turn around with the numbers of the department coming forward and asking termination of parental rights. And in this case, and very oftentimes you have a case like this where early on, or not early on, but I mean quite some time prior, the department makes the decision, we're going to terminate parental rights, and then nothing is done after that. And have we almost maybe gone too far the other way without understanding that there has to be some proof here beyond, or you know, there has to be more reasonable efforts or whatever? Have we become too lenient in requiring the department on behalf of all of us as society to work more with these parents who have difficulties such as addictions and emotional problems and so on?
I guess I can't comment on other cases. However, I beg to differ with counsel's characterization of what the department did after they made the decision to terminate parental rights. That decision, I don't believe, was made until March of 2003. After that time, mother continued to receive services, whether they were through the department or through other agencies. What counsel's objection is the visitation, that mother had requested increased visitation. And granted, the department, acknowledged the department did not increase the visitation as mother had requested, but I think the reason for it not to do so or to refuse to do so was reasonable. They were looking at pursuing termination of parental rights. The worker testified that it would be confusing for the child to increase visitation at a time when that was true. They had concerns that mother was continuing in her relationship with the boyfriend, mother did not move out until March of 2003, a year after she said she was going to. Okay. And then continued in her relationship after that. So I think given the timing, on top of that, at the time that the department recommended termination of parental rights, took that stance, I believe the dispositional hearing was scheduled for May. It was continued until the end of June at the request of mother. So the time period when that occurred, the failure to increase visitation wasn't terminated, it just wasn't increased. As far as returning the child to the mother, that the only testimony or evidence in favor of returning the child to the mother was Dr. Christensen's evaluation, which was the basis for the continuation of the final dispositional hearing. It was done at the very end of the case. And the department had Dr. Dame's earlier evaluation. The department had the history of mother. The workers were well aware that mother had been involved in the proceedings in Beadle County, had moved to Mitchell while the proceedings in Beadle County were continuing, had started receiving the services that counsel had described, the increased services in Mitchell while the Beadle County case was still ongoing. Nevertheless, after receiving those services for almost a year, mother again slid down that hill that I talked about required further hospitalization and resulted in the child being in foster care again. So that pattern went up and down. And there was some discussion earlier about what if mom is down and then comes up? Shouldn't we give the mother the benefit of the doubt in this case? Well, what distinguishes this case from that is we've got the up and down and up and down. We don't just have down and up. So I would suggest that if the court is truly looking at what's in the best interest of the child, then the doubt must be resolved in the child's favor.
Did she have alcohol relapses while in Mitchell?
I don't know that there's any indication that she had alcohol relapses. And I believe...
But she was hospitalized?
She was hospitalized in Mitchell for psychiatric.
At what point in the 8 months?
That wasn't during the 8 months. That's what the incident which led to placement of the child in foster care. Again, that was during a time when mother and child were receiving extensive services in Mitchell. You know, those services that council relies on, it was already happening. And I think that's part of the reason, too, why the court may have given less weight to Dr. Christensen's recommendation. Because Dr. Christensen was recommending that we try returning the child to mother's care subject to certain conditions. Well, those conditions are the same thing that mother had been receiving for the year prior to the child's removal. And again, I suggest that what changed wasn't necessarily her leaving the boyfriend. What changed was the child was not in her care. In fact, I don't think the boyfriend really had a lot to do with it. And the reason I say that is because this was child's fourth placement in foster care. The boyfriend wasn't involved in the three earlier placements. Granted, the boyfriend was present. In fact, he was the individual who called the police, I believe, when mother became suicidal in October. So he was present during the last placement, but I don't recall that he was present during the first three placements. And I don't think the fact that she moved out accounts for her improvement. In that regard, the state acknowledges that mother improved. But I don't think mother improved enough. I don't think the evidence is there to contradict what Dr. Dame had predicted, that mother has a persistent and chronic mental illness, that she's likely to, again, go up and down. But that part of it's not going to change, because the services that are recommended to keep her up here are services that had been provided long before and haven't worked.
But isn't it true with people with mental illness, sometimes if you do, I mean, they're constantly, people who have children and have mental illnesses and have family support and don't get involved with the Department of Social Services, that it's true that over a period of time trying to treat mental illness that you may have to change medications and change the treatment and perhaps change the doctor, and sometimes they can get the right combination. And then other times, I mean, it is a cyclical thing with anybody that has mental illness, which is a mental illness.
And I agree, that's true. But the factor that exists here is that we have a child who's only 5 years old and has been in foster care four times already. And we have a mother who is suffering from mental illness and is unable to provide a safe and stable environment for the child 8 months after the child's removal.
Was there any alternatives presented to the trial court?
I think the only alternative presented was return of the child subject to the conditions. And Worker Miller testified that she had serious concerns regarding the child's safety, that in her opinion, in order for mother to properly parent the child, to make good parenting decisions, because I should backtrack a little bit, several of the reports that were received concerns mother's lack of supervision, that she wasn't properly supervising the child who was 4 or 5 years old and riding around Mitchell on his bike, that she was not making good parenting decisions. Worker Miller testified that those concerns still remained, and that in her opinion, mother wouldn't be able to make appropriate parenting decisions and child would not be safe in mother's care without 24-hour-a-day supervision involvement, and that those services were not available. Okay. In that regard, I think the court can look back to an earlier decision that is factually very similar to this case, and that's In re J.H., in the matter of J.H., back in 1993. That's a case, too, where mother had mental illness. The court was asked, the trial court was asked to try something which had already been tried before, and decided no, that the least restrictive alternative in the best interest of the child was not to try, not to put on hold, not to put the child or make the gamble that it will take the gamble that it will work this time, but instead to resolve to look at what was the best interest of the child, again, not to try what has been done before. And that decision of the trial court was affirmed by this court. So I'd suggest that that, again, is very is factually similar to this the decision here. I can regroup for a minute here. I think the court was correct in finding, again, that reasonable efforts were made. I think there's ample precedent that the court can look at the services that were provided in the past, that the court is not limited to services that were provided after the child was placed in custody during the pending proceeding. Were that true, were the Adoption and Safe Families Act interpreted in that manner, that I think flies against pre-existing law, that the court again can look at the series of what services have been provided, and based upon that, in some circumstances, say reasonable efforts aren't going to be provided. I acknowledge that the court did not make that determination in this case. The court was asked to. I think that the court may have gone along with that argument if the record is reviewed closely, but granted, the findings and conclusions don't reflect that. But I don't think that the Adoption and Safe Families Act should be interpreted in any way to limit the court's ability to look at the history.
So you agree that there should have been a determination that all reasonable efforts had been provided?
There should have been a determination. I believe there was a determination that all reasonable efforts were provided. And I think counsel disagrees to the extent that visitation wasn't provided, that contradicts whether or not reasonable efforts were provided. I think the court found that reasonable efforts were provided, found that the conditions still remained, and those conditions include mother's mental illness and her inability to provide a safe and stable environment for the child, and that it was unlikely, given her mental illness and given that history, that up and down, that those conditions would be remedied in the future. There might be some improvement, but I would suggest that that's not good enough for a child who's been placed in foster care this many times, that some improvement is not, given the age of the child. Again, the court was correct in resolving that doubt in the interest of the child. Any other questions? I believe that concludes my...
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Holzhauser. Mr. Papanick, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Your Honor, simply, it would be our contention that when a case is fast-tracked for termination, that the decision isn't made right there to terminate parental rights. The mother in this particular case abided by all the terms and conditions set forth in the family service plan. She did everything there and then some. The state should complement that by adapting a program that would meet her needs. In this case, there was more than just additional visitations that we would have asked for. We would have asked for return of the child. Not right now, but before school would have started, she would have been back, or the child would have been back in the home. In response to Justice Meyer Henry's concern, it does seem like the Department of Social Services is terminating a great deal of cases. I was a prosecutor from 1984 until, well, it'd be through 1996, and we handled a lot of cases, and I've been in private practice since then and have handled a few since then as well. before, it just seemed like we were pulling teeth, at least in Mitchell, to get the Department of Social Services to say that we need to terminate parental rights. That is not the case anymore. It seems like they make that request at the drop of a hat. If a person misses visitations, if a person doesn't follow through with an alcohol evaluation, all of those are grounds right now for termination of parental rights. They don't look at the strides that a parent has made towards getting this child back in to their custody. They simply don't look at that. And in this particular case, what they did here was they pigeonholed it with all the other cases. And as I indicated, there are a lot of cases where the parents don't comply with the plan. They simply don't. They fail. And they fail miserably. And it's actually probably a good thing that parental rights are terminated. But in this case, the parent, the mother in this case, did everything she could to get her child back. And she did make significant improvement. She changed her lifestyle. Not only did she move out of her boyfriend's house, she changed her medications. She's on medication management. Her anger has subsided substantially. She was a different person from the time this case started in October to the time that this case went to trial in late June. It was a different case. She was a different person. And in that respect...
Was it almost incumbent then on you to put her on the stand to demonstrate that to the trial court judge? Because it seems like, you know, it seems like you've got that... The burden of going forward at least passed to you, even though the state has the obligation to show that they exerted all reasonable efforts.
She was willing to testify, and I think she would have done reasonably well in testifying. But this was a case, if you look at the statute, we just didn't feel like the three criteria in terminating parental rights was there. And we got essentially all that we needed to get in during the case, and it was a judgmental decision on my part not to put her on the stand. But she was willing to testify, and she would have told the court what efforts she had made and why she wants the child back.
How can we say, though, that the trial court abused its discretion when you've got this child's been removed four times, starting since the child was, I think, around 3 months of age. Child's now 6 years old.
6 years.
Failure after failure after failure. I mean, you recognize, obviously, our cases which say at some point, you know, there has to be a finality to these situations. And how is it the trial court was wrong to say, well, this is it, this is the end?
Well, and that's a valid concern. If termination had proceeded in Beadle County, I mean, it'd be speculation on my part, but the odds are that parental rights probably would have been terminated.
How old was the child when the mother left Beadle County?
I believe 5. She wasn't in Davison County all that long.
I thought she's 5. I thought she's 5 now.
Oh, excuse me. May have been. The child was 6 at the time of the dispositional trial. The child may have been 4 years old when they left Huron.
Why wasn't the child included in the Beadle County termination then? So the child was, 3 years old, you say?
Yes.
Why wasn't the child included in the Beadle County termination process?
Well, the father's parental rights were terminated in Beadle County. The mother was also listed as a respondent in Beadle County. But for some reason, they terminated... The father voluntarily terminated his rights in Beadle County, and the Department of Social Services set up a plan for mother, and for some reason didn't terminate. I spoke with the attorney who represented her. It's only speculation on my part. I never talked to the state's attorney or any of the social workers in Beadle County. Could be a number of factors I like to think that it was because she made some improvements in Beadle County. It could be that she decided to move to Davison County and they felt that she was out of their hair. Could be any number of reasons.
You're completed?
I think so, unless there are any other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you for your consideration.
We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.